from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Manning takes the knee and the New York Giants are the Super Bowl 42 champions.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
They knock off the mighty Patriots 17-14.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Yeah. Right back at it on The Fan. You know, watching the Mets game and watching them blow a 3-0 lead when you're rooting for them, like, I understand some of the Mets fans' pain. Like, that just pissed me off right there. I'm like, really, bro? How that just went down? How those three runs were scored? I'm like, come on. We need your help. Let's go Yankee Mets. Let's go Mets. Like, we come on now. Now it's a new ball game here. And it didn't have to be this way. Anyway, I told you we're done with the Clay Holmes stuff. So as we get to my next guest and as we get to Richie in Queens, I just had a thought, right? I just turned up the volume on the studio monitor to hear what Tua Tagovailoa had to say about Brian Flores. Man, and I remember that was such a topic. It was so many takes and thoughts about that. And I remember saying, there's got to be some bad word about that guy. We can't just always play the race card. We can't just lean into, oh, he's a black coach. Like, there's definitely some of that. If anybody can relate to that, I can relate to that. But, like, there's got to be something else. I remember I leaned into the fact that, like, Chris Greer, the general manager of the Miami Dolphins, is black. So it couldn't just be a discrimination thing, a prejudice thing, a racist thing. With Brian Flores, he was this close to being the Giants head coach. Remember all that? The Bill Belichick text? And, you know, Brian Flores, I think, is from Queens, Brooklyn, somewhere out here. But there must have been a bad word about him. To hear Tua say that he came in as a rookie, like, think about the cushiony landing place, the soft landing spot Caleb Williams has. If you're watching Hard Knocks, which has been great, and if you're watching Caleb Williams play in the preseason, I think he's going to be great. He was great in college. But if you think about the landing spot that that young man has had as a rookie with receivers, running backs, a defense. Like, it looks like the Chicago Bears, they built up enough around him. And Matt Eberflus and those guys, like, they're having meetings with him and they're talking to him. They're bringing him along. They even had Nick Saban come in, you know. How hard is it after the tank for Tua era for Tua to come in as a rookie and then have a head coach saying, you suck, you don't deserve to be here? I think they wanted to draft Justin Herbert, but they drafted him. And then you have Mike McDaniel, who's a complete different type of personality than Brian Flores as a head coach, is definitely going to have a longer run. And he's the opposite. Kind of crazy, right? Now, think about Daniel Jones and what Daniel Jones had to come into. Drafted 6th overall, expected to be an Eli Manning clone, having different head coaches. And even just 2 years ago, having Brian Daboll rip him apart on the sideline, throw iPads, curse him out. And I think we might be in store for some of that this year. Dave's does not have to take it easy on this guy. We all know the writing on the wall is like, yo, if this guy doesn't play well this year, he's gone. They have the opt-out. They have whatever the cap hit, the $22 million, whatever. Also, there's the clause for injury in that contract. They don't want to guarantee him any money, so let's see how it goes. You know, my question as we start to get into this New York Giants conversation is how long is the leash on Daniel Jones this year? Like, how many games does he get to not be effective or turn the ball over, you know, not throw touchdowns, not, you know? All eyes are on him. This whole year is about Daniel Jones. They didn't pay Saquon. They paid him. Right? Saquon is gone. It's on the quarterback. And I think they're ready to deal with that. I saw a mock draft came out already from, I think, the 33rd team, if you guys follow them. They have the Giants picking number one in next year's draft, taking Shedeur Sanders. Shedeur Sanders, who was left off the AP college football preseason first team or any of the teams, the AP, they left him off. You know, they don't have love for Colorado and Deion Sanders. Richie is in Queens before we go to Charlotte Carroll on the Fan. What's up, Richie?
Keith, how you been? Real quick, I know you kind of talking about the thing. They have to make a switch with Holmes, I think. I think Weaver, if people are listening to BT today, maybe put Schmidt in there. No way. I don't see that. Maybe G goes in there.
If there ever was a time, maybe. I used my platform. 10 blown saves, don't do it. Nope. Stop. We can't keep going like this.
Yeah, I mean, just look with Duvall, the Giants. You know, I'm a big Giant fan. They sent Duvall down. He was an all-star last year. He's down the minors.
There you go. There's another example.
10 games. That's major. Hey, with the football Giants, you're 100% right. We've talked about this before. The spotlight is going to be on Jones. The secondary, I think, Keith, is not good. Flott, you know, it's going to be a fight with McBride, Hawkins. They lost McKinney. Pinnick, I know he's a hard hitter. I don't know how good he is on defense. They got this new kid, Newbin, who's a safety. So the pass rush is going to be such a key. Obviously, it makes you 20% better back there if you put pressure on the quarterback. But Jones, you know, and I agree with the short leash, but you got Locke and you got Tommy DeVito. So if he gets to that level, then we're looking at 5 wins again. So
good. Tank this time because you missed out on Jaden Daniels. You missed out on Drake May because you wanted to win some games for morale and not trade Saquon Barkley away because he was the captain of the team. Now he's not even on the team. You got to tank this time. Thanks for the call, Richie. You picking up what I'm putting down? If they're already ranking the Giants roster around 30, 31, 32, they have ranked Devin Singletary as the worst starting running back in the league. I'm at Fanatics Fest Friday. Tom Brady gets on stage and says, well, what if Daniel Jones throws an interception? The crowd groans, and he says, oh, I didn't mean it like that. He's spoken into existence. The next day, Daniel Jones comes out and throws 2 interceptions, and we're like, wait, that's a $40 million quarterback in year 6 making these type of mistakes in the preseason? It's just preseason. Get it out your system now. But if Daniel Jones does not have it, he does not have a long runway, because whether you're tanking or whether you're trying to win games, if you recognize within the first 5 games of the year his quarterback play isn't good enough, you have to go to Drew Lock or Tommy Cutlets. Do the Tommy Cutlets thing again. But this time, lose the games. Tank. Shane and Daboll, they're safe. After watching Hard Knocks, they're safe. She's on the line now? I'm sorry. Charlotte Carroll from The Athletic covering your New York Giants. I didn't see the screen pop up with your name. There's just the one over there. I did not realize you're on the line. I saw my producer working on it. I thought he was still calling you. Welcome back, Charlotte.
Hey, thanks so much for having me back on.
I mean, perfect time. Did you hear any of the little bit of the Giants rant that I was going on?
Oh, I heard it. I wasn't going to interrupt that one.
So we'll start there. The thing I'm talking about right now is like, okay, if Daniel Jones is gun shy, right, if he's worried about his knee and his neck, there's guys in the NFL that are big, fast, strong, and they're coming for him. We obviously know there are guys in the NFL that play defense that don't respect him. I mean, he is up against it. Out of all the challenges he's faced, this is his biggest one. How long is the leash on Daniel Jones if he's not getting it done? If he's not throwing the ball into the end zone? If he's not scoring touchdowns? We just were talking about the secondary. We'll get there in a minute, but I think there's going to be some games where you're going to have to keep up. You're going to have to keep pace. This Giants defense is not going to be able to necessarily hold teams. How long is the leash on Daniel Jones if he's not performing this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first thing to take into consideration just going off of this weekend, is it was his first game action, excuse me, back from tearing that ACL. So obviously things are going to be a little rusty. It wasn't pretty. There was some bad decision-making. He got progressively better as the second quarter wore on and decision-making was better. He had that long throw to Darius Slayton. But when it comes time to the season, I think, yes, there's going to be a high focus on his decision-making, what he can do, what that looks like. I don't know what that looks like, how many games, if they decide to keep going with, as you said, the Tommy Cutlets experience, what that kind of entails. Drew Lock hasn't necessarily always looked much better than Daniel Jones in practice. I mean, Daniel has at times looked good throughout training camp. So I don't know. It's kind of like they didn't get their quarterback in the draft, so they kind of just have to deal with what they've got kind of situation.
Yeah, you know, I've defended Daniel Jones, and I think I've been labeled as a Daniel Jones defender. I said the same thing. The guy hadn't played since, I don't know, last November, October, whatever it was.
Early November.
You know, it's his first live game action. I do feel like, you know, he was probably trying to not get hit or force it and make plays. It's exhibition. It's fine. Get it out of your system now. If it's going to happen, have it happen then. Learn from it and don't make the same mistakes. It's fine. It's fine. But, you know, when you talk about Drew Lock, I also said if Drew Lock doesn't get hurt in the first preseason game, maybe we don't see Daniel Jones so fast. Maybe we don't see him thrust into action. And I really do think that Brian Daboll does not want to do another year of the Tommy Cutlets, Tommy DeVito, Jersey guy. Like, I think he's over that. That's why they went and paid a Drew Lock. But before the season even started, I said there's almost a guarantee that Drew Lock is going to make a handful of starts, if not more. I don't think that that's the way that you go to win games. I just think that that's like inevitably where this is going to go, whether Daniel Jones is hurt or not performing. The only way that you stop a Drew Lock from making starts is if Daniel Jones stays healthy and balls out. And I can't, judging off the last five seasons, I can't say that that's something I would put a dollar on.
No, I mean, the health is a big concern. But what was promising was that the offensive line was actually competent on Saturday. Like, again, they were missing some key. The Texans were missing some key edge rushers. It's a preseason game. But the fact that they kept him up, he didn't get sacked, he had time to throw, that's at least promising when it comes to his health and being able to stay afloat this season. With Drew Lock getting hurt, I think Daniel Jones is always going to play this game. He needed to get preseason action before the regular season. He needed to get back out there. So he needed that. And Brian Daboll kind of changed some approaches throughout training camp this year. It's a little bit more kind of aggressive. There's a little bit more 11-on-11, not doing as much 7-on-7 compared to last year. So there's definitely been changes with camp go around. And part of that included giving the starters plenty of time this week to kind of gel and see what happens. Whether that's the case this weekend against the Jets, probably not. We'll see. But unlikely if we're kind of leaning on last year.
Yeah, great point about, you know, him needing to play and get back out there. So maybe he was going to play whether Locke was available or not. And also a great point about the offensive line. With the additions that they made on the offensive line, I think this might potentially maybe kind of be the best offensive line he's had. Where, you know, it's yet to be seen, but I think it's got a good shot to be. And I definitely know this is the best group of weapons as far as the wide receiver goes, obviously not in the backfield, that he's had. He has Malik Nabers. Malik Nabers hurts his ankle, comes out and plays, makes some good catches, and it's just obvious when you look at the guy that he's an alpha. He's a dog. He's somebody that's going to get open. And if Daniel Jones can get the ball to him, he'll be all right. So what do you think about the new additions to the offensive line from Aluminor to Runyon to Van Roten, or even now when we look at this receiving core with Malik Nabers and Hyatt and Wandale Robinson? Like, they have the guys on offense that I think they can score points. They can move the ball. Their offense can get going, but it all relies on Daniel Jones. What do you think about the additions around Daniel Jones?
Yeah, I'll start with the offensive line because I think since we were just talking about that, that's going to be the most important thing, and kind of whether even Daniel can get the ball out quick enough to be able to throw it downfield if 11 at a time to be able to use those weapons that were brought in for him. But it looked good throughout camp. I mean, 10 days, they're doing what they can. The biggest thing for them, I think, will be the consistency, and injuries derailed them so early last year, and that kind of plagued them a little bit throughout camp already. They've been able to kind of keep somewhat the same pieces together, but there's been John Michael Smith, starting center, was coming off a shoulder injury, missed some time this camp. And Runyon's been on the sidelines with this past week with a shoulder injury. So there's little things that are kind of like, you know, added together, but the communication is better from what we've been kind of hearing. So that's promising. They are playing together more as a group from what I've been talking to people, kind of what they were saying. So we'll see if that holds up in game time against really good defensive lines and edge rushers. I don't know. We'll see. That's always the $1 million question in New York, it feels like. And I haven't been around Daniel Jones' entire career here, but from what everyone's saying, this is that potential to be that Buffalo line. But on the receiving end, oh my God, it's so much fun to watch Malik Nabers in camp. And what's been really promising is that we saw him do what he's been doing in camp and game action on Saturday. We saw that kind of leaping acrobatic catch. He's been doing that all summer. So it's really exciting for Giants fans to watch that kind of translate into a game and know it's not just a practice thing. So that's really promising. And as a core, as a whole, to have that weapon, he's going to get targeted a lot.
So I was just talking to Richie and Queens about the Giants secondary. I had Dan Duggan on, I think, a week ago, and he told me that you guys kind of like split up offense, defense, different fields to cover. I don't know how much of a look you've gotten at the secondary. Can you tell us who's struggled? Can you tell us who's had a good camp? Can you maybe tell us who's, you know, potentially going to be a breakout star? I know they were in on potentially signing Stephon Gilmore, and he went to the Vikings, who they'll face week one. But, yeah, I just feel like we need a little bit more insight on the defensive backs, on the corners and the safeties, especially after, you know, they lose Julian Love 2 years ago, Xavier McKinney. Like, this is going to be a different-looking secondary for the Giants. And in the NFL, I mean, these guys are going to be one-on-one. There's going to be potential for big plays if they're not ready as a unit to go.
Definitely. I think with all the hype about Malik Nabers and the quarterback situation this offseason, the secondary, at least up until this point, had kind of taken a backseat of just how like kind of thin in depth that had gotten. And it's still kind of the case. Injuries have been, that's a consistent theme in camp, I feel like, that's been a problem for the Giants, especially at corner. They've been, Cordell Flott missed some time, so he's kind of had to step out of that, you know, CB2 battle. We've got Deontay Banks coming off a rookie year, who had a good year, but he's going to be asked to step up into this number one spot. Is he ready to do that? He kind of got beat on the play on Saturday. Nico Collins beat him. So is that something he's kind of put behind him and just kind of move on to the next one? We'll see. CB2, kind of question mark. Is it going to be Cordell Flott? Nick McLeod's been spending all that time there. Is he going to be able to kind of win it out from McLeod? And then that spot corner, Andrew Phillips had really like a strong joint practice, and then he got hurt, so he's missing some time. So Isaiah Simmons has been in there. Other guys have been in there too, kind of rotating. There's been a lot of rotation, trying to figure it out. And same thing at the safety position, where Jason Pinnock is, you know, that starter. But then it's kind of between Dane Belton and Tyler Newbin, the new rookie. But Tyler Newbin had missed time, so he's kind of playing catch up, but he was getting a lot of starter snaps at last week, and then, rotating first team reps with Dane Belton last week, and then in the preseason game this past Saturday. So there's a lot of rotation, a lot of moving parts, and the question is, will they be able to kind of keep it together come game time? It is really going to be interesting, especially with this new defensive coordinator, Shane Bowen, where the focus is really, and the emphasis is on the front four. So in theory, they can take care of it up there, but that leaves, again, as you mentioned, the possibility for big plays. So I don't know, it's kind of still in flux, and we'll see how it plays out, but it's really injuries have really kind of left their mark at this point, and that's been the big storyline, because you can't really tell who's going to win these battles just because they're not on the field.
Simmons is an interesting name. I forget about him from time to time. That was a top 10 pick, and they traded for him. I don't think he's, you know, really had a breakout moment. I think maybe it'll come this year. I was reading about how he's kind of a hybrid and how they plan on using him. Have you seen anything from him? He's such a freak athlete, and like just even his size for the position. I remember when he was coming out of Clemson and went to Arizona, you know, people were looking at him as like one of the top defensive guys to take. He's still very young. Any insight on how he's going to be used and how he's looked in camp?
Yeah, I mean, he's obviously a really good athlete. He's been at slot corner, actually, lining up this past week and a half, filling in for Phillips. And you could tell, I mean, it might not be the strongest suit for him. He had a good coverage on a defensive play in the end zone, but then he got beat on that touchdown on Saturday. Just kind of going horizontally, it wasn't great for him to kind of get that. He wasn't able to do that. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting. Can he find a fit Or is he kind of rotating aimlessly until they find something? And right now, I don't know if they've been able to find that for him, despite his great athleticism and his skills. Obviously, they'll kind of turn to him for stuff, but whether that's the right fit or what is that right fit is still kind of percolating.
We're on the phone right now with Charlotte Carroll, who covers the New York Giants for The Athletic. Another question for you. I mean, this guy stood out. Everybody saw this play from Elijah Chatham. I'd never heard of
the guy. I knew you were saying that as soon as you said
that. Yeah, because it was a ridiculous rundown, and it shows like the want to, the effort that you want to see out of a guy trying to make a team. Like, they had in-season hard knocks. If they had this in preseason hard knocks, this guy would get featured just off that play. And I also saw that they made a trade. They traded away to the Dallas Cowboys Jordan Phillips, a defensive lineman. So can we talk about the unit on defense that I think is going to be very strong? I am a Florida State football fan, grew up rooting for the Noles. So I just think Brian Burns is a man amongst boys. I think that if he gets going, like, Giants fans are going to show up wearing Spider-Man costumes, and that number zero is going to get popular. We already know about Sexy Dexy doing his dance all the time and how dominant he is up the middle. And Kayvon, I think Kayvon this year, I mean, he had a good year last year, but I think this year he's definitely going to have an opportunity to have a big year, because they're going to have to figure out who to double over there between Dexter Lawrence and Brian Burns. Can you tell us a little bit more about the Giants' defensive line?
Yeah, no, I mean, you said it yourself. That's a hope, is that offenses will kind of have to decide whether they want to face Burns or Kayvon. And so far in camp, they've looked really strong. It's nice to see kind of Kayvon's progression. The key for him will be consistency. Can he bring that every week, and can he match Burns, and can they do that double tandem, which will be fascinating to watch in conjunction with, as you brought up, Dexter Lawrence, and kind of the next man up is Raheem Nunez-Rochez, Nacho. So that's kind of, you know, the starting front four. And then that kind of spot behind really had been actually used by, they've been playing Ryder Anderson, and they just waived him today. He suffered an injury in Saturday's game. So there's room for someone to step up. The competition that they've been having all summer has been, you know, rotating between guys trying to find, you know, the backup behind those guys. And Chapman has really brought it. He's made those first team reps. And then he's been playing first team a little bit here and there. And then on Saturday, we saw that. And then that play just kind of sealed the deal. If he doesn't make the roster, I'd be shocked. Because that's the kind of thing you want to see from a tryout. Like, he wasn't even, like, drafted. He was a tryout player that they brought in. So it's just a great story. And if he doesn't make the roster, I'd be shocked.
Yeah, so my last question for you actually is about, you know, the roster. Like, I saw Jalen Mills was cut. And he's a guy that's a proven NFL player. I guess he's obviously getting up there in age, but I thought he was a guy that potentially could help the Giants secondary. Now we're getting close to, you know, 53-man rosters. Is there a guy that's like a fringe guy, or maybe a name of a guy that's made some plays, like maybe even like an Isaiah McKenzie? Is there somebody that is on the chopping block that may or may not make the cut, may or may not make the 53-man roster?
Yeah, I think the injuries are going to be the key thing here, and I know that sounds very cliche, but it's just reality. I mean, Ryder Anderson felt like a lock and then he waived because of the injury situation. I think Isaiah McKenzie's in a good spot because of the injury situation. Gunner, who'd been kind of acting as the punt returner last year, he's been out with an injury for a couple weeks. So that's going to kind of, you know, they have to turn to Isaiah McKenzie. We brought up Chapman. I think he's a good contender with a potential spot for a roster. Trying to think who else is a sneaky pick. I don't know. Jake Kubas is a offensive lineman, a rookie. You know, he's been in there with the first team at times. We'll see what happens this week and kind of going into next, if that kind of stays consistent. But I'm looking at him a little bit. They like him a lot. So we'll see.
They can't cut Tommy DeVito, right? They got to carry three quarterbacks. I mean, he's a cult favorite, a local guy. And now with, you know, Daniel Jones, couple interceptions, Drew Lock being early, they got to carry three quarterbacks, right?
You would think. I don't know. I mean, I think I had in my 53-man, I didn't have actually Tommy make the 53. I've had him on the practice squad. But there is, like, with the quarter, because of the quarterback rule changes here, where you can carry or you can elevate a third quarterback on game day kind of a situation, and there's unlimited for that. So
that's a good, sorry to cut you off, because I just had a thought about that. I forgot about that rule, but, like, if he doesn't make the 53-man roster and goes to the practice squad, he'll have to go through waivers, right?
Yeah. So
he's not. He's too popular. He's not. Somebody's going to take him. Somebody's going to come get him.
I don't know.
The Jets.
I don't know. We'll see.
The Jets should get him.
Oh, God. There you go. That's
they got
exactly
two injury-prone quarterbacks between Aaron Rodgers and Tyrod Taylor. The Jets. I'm just saying.
we'll see what happens this week. Giants just joined practice. I mean, it'll be the battle for Tommy DeVito.
There you go. Perfect segue out. Charlotte Carroll from The Athletic covering your New York Giants. Thanks again, Charlotte.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Appreciate it. 888-808-1019. Okay. I have a guest that might join us at 10:15. I'm going to text him and bother him in like 25 minutes, see if he's down. But if he's not, that's perfectly fine. Taking your calls, right? I just said the number. I already have some people online. See, Albert and Edison heard something about Daniel Jones and Malik Nabers. He called the Fan. That's smart. Now he's first. We'll come to him next. So we got to go to a quick break. I'm stressing. Like, I'm doing the whole, like, be a Mets fan thing, and I'm watching this game. It's stressful, bruh. It's different kind of stress with the Yankees because, like, I mean, like, they were up 3-0. I'm talking to Eitan Levine about the Mets sweeping. And now it's 3-3. Edwin Diaz is out here. And stupid Orioles, Corbin Burns is barking about something. I don't know what his problem is. I guess they're obviously mad about balls and strikes. I'm like, I'm trying to figure out what's going on here. I'm doing interviews. I'm hosting a show. And I'm being this fake Mets fan right now. And it's not going my way. Come on. Let's go, Mets. I need the Mets to get these last two outs and then walk off the Orioles. We do not want to do Manfred's man on second.
Let's go, Mets.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Annoy people on the quiet car and call the Fan. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
Let's go! My favorite man! That was legitness. Yo, I gotta send a Slack to the digital team. Because if they can check the cameras in here, you got me, obviously, Yankees fan, Rami Lavie, who is a Yankees fan, but he goes to Citi Field and he claims the Mets a little bit and then he gives them back when they're not doing good. And then Gallo, who's coming up after me tonight, we're all in here talking. I stop dead sentence and I go, oh! And before the camera shows center field, I already knew. I could tell by the way Alvarez swung. I could tell by his reaction. Oh, my God. Walked it off. That's what I was looking for. TWTW, the will to win. Somebody make it happen for the Make It Happen Mets. And it's my favorite Met, El Troll Francisco Alvarez. Stay tuned for my Casamigos big shot of the night. That's how you get it done. That's how you handle business when these bums from Baltimore come to New York. 888-808-1019. That was lit. That was fun. That was a good time right there. I was worried. I rode the roller coaster like a Mets fan tonight. I was feeling like the Mets fans feel. A 3-0 lead. They blew it on some nonsense. A balk. David Peterson had been so solid. The unsung hero. I was just singing his praises. His last few starts, he throws the ball right down the middle of the plate. It gets rocked. Francisco Alvarez have been struggling. But he got that dog in him. He's an alpha. A leader on the team as the youngest guy on the team. And he comes through huge right there to walk it off for the Mets. What did I say before break? We don't want to do Manfred's man on second. And this. Put the team on his back. Number four, Francisco Alvarez.
That was legitness.
There it is. I play it again.
That was legitness.
Yeah, it was.
That was legitness. Francisco Alvarez. Dog. Francisco Alvarez. TWTW, the will to win. And now I lost my Giants caller. I was about to talk Giants, but now we're about to talk Mets. 888-808-1019. There's the first one. Thank you. Thank you. We are united. Yankee fans and Mets fans online celebrating right now. I love it. I'm talking to everybody on Twitter. We are united on this one. There's no reason for the Yankee fan to be hating on the Mets tonight. We need you. Help us out. We're not playing. And you know what? You just knocked the Orioles down a peg. So last night, Yankee fans, we didn't sleep that good off the Clay Holmes. And that just made the Clay Holmes blown save into lighter. Like, that just made it even worse. That just made it even worse, New York Yankees. You could have taken the game and series and been up a whole game. Now you're up a half a game as the Baltimore Orioles lose. They are 73-53, and the Yankees are 73-52, not playing tonight. You better take these games serious. That's why I keep saying this is an unserious group. Take this game seriously coming up tomorrow. John Sterling's going to be in the building, please. And I would love to see John, but I'm not going to bother him. I'm not going to go out of my way to get in his way because I know everybody's going to be, oh, John. I'm going to leave John Sterling alone. But he's going to be in the building. He's going to hop back in the booth. It's John and Susan t-shirt night. I guarantee you I'm going to get me one of those. Shout out to Tina, and Tina's mom sent me their tickets. I'm going to get Tina her shirt as well. And we're going to celebrate John and Susan tomorrow night against the Guardians. And take it serious. It's getting late in the year. You know the Guardians are taking it serious. The Guardians are coming in here and they're trying to prove something. On the greatest stage, New York City, on the main stage, they're coming in here trying to knock the Yankees off. So can we simultaneously handle business? The Mets did what they had to do. Come on, Mets. Let's go, Mets. I need the Mets to sweep them. Straight up. They can. Why can't they? Can't sweep them if you don't win the first game. Done. 888-808-1019. Mets fans and Yankee fans can be in concert tonight. Let's party. Let's in unison talk about, wow, what a great game. Yeah, you know, Francisco Alvarez, he's got that dog in him. He came back, walked it off. He's been struggling a little bit, but he can do that. Great. That's how you do it. Okay, forget about not sweeping the Marlins. Play up. Here's a good team. You swept the Yankees. Why can't you sweep the Baltimore Orioles? I think you can. Looking at that game right now, looking at the box score and whatnot right now, J.D. Martinez early, Francisco Alvarez, Tyrone Taylor drove in another one. That's enough. And when you look at the bullpen, David Peterson, Jose Buto. How many pitches did Jose Buto throw? Is he specifically just the first game in every series? He could only pitch game one of every series. Jose Buto threw 17 pitches. He can be available Wednesday? Or maybe not. I don't know. I guess they have like some harsh rules, some strict guidelines on how you can use your best weapon out of the bullpen, Jose Buto. But 17 pitches, bro? Come on. If you need him to potentially, like, I'm lobbying as a Yankee fan. If you need him, Carlos Mendoza, former Yankee bench coach, if you need him Wednesday, use him. He threw 17 pitches. He'll get two nights rest. If there's a tough spot in a potential rubber match or a potential sweep game, please go ahead and press the Buto button. Thank you, Mendy. Appreciate you, bro. Help us out. Because the Yankees can't help themselves out. The Yankees just got to stay stuck on stupid and do the same stupid things and expect different results and tell you, oh, yeah, well, you know, he pitched well. He had some good stuff tonight. Oh, you know, it was just a... Bruce is in Flushing. Bruce, you're on the Fan.
Hey, Keith, I want to talk about the closer situation. I also want to talk about Boone's press conference last night. To me, there was a difference last night. Usually when a reporter brings out how lousy Holmes is, and he usually says, oh, don't be ridiculous, he's our closer. Last night, for the first time, he said, well, we have other options. He's our closer right now, but we'll see.
He did kind of leave the door open for something, and that's why I said, that's it. You don't have to scream it from the rooftops. Just do it.
Yeah. Now, I want to go over the options with you. I want to get your opinion on it. Now, if you go just with good stuff and how he's been pitching the last 6 or 8 weeks, I brought this up to you last week, Cousins would be the ideal guy. But I don't think the Yankees trust Cousins enough to make him the closer. Do you agree?
Well, like, I don't think we have to name anybody. That's what I'm saying. I don't think we have to say, this is the closer, this is the closer. I think it's just open-ended. We'll see if we're facing the top of the order, the middle of the order, the bottom of the order. We'll see if it's lefties, righties. We'll see what the bullpen budget on Yes Network says about how many pitches were thrown. You know, I don't think, you know, we need to say Clay Holmes is demoted and Luke Weaver is the closer, or this guy is the closer, or Jake Cousins or Tommy Kahnle or whatever. It's just, you don't know. Let's keep them guessing. Let's keep the opponent on their heels.
Right, but if you're the manager, you have to have in the back of your mind, okay, when things get tight, who would I rather go to? Now, I understand your point about bullpen by committee, but I think the manager needs to know for himself, who do I want to be in there? And I would love Cousins, but I don't think they're going to do it. I think they're going to split it between Weaver and Kahnle. Because those two have the most experience. They're both set up guys. And that's who I think they're going to lean to. But, again, it will probably be by committee. But I think it's important enough that a manager has to know, who do I really want in there? You agree or disagree?
I agree, but like, not for nothing, I don't feel like it's Boone's decision alone. This is something that they're going to talk about, and they have a script, they have lanes, they have a plan. That's how we end up in these stupid situations anyway, right? When you go back to Michael Tonkin landing with the team at 2 a.m. and having to pitch in that game, right? He didn't even know all of his teammates' names that Friday night in Milwaukee. Clay Holmes hadn't pitched all week. He throws 10 pitches and they say, that's it, he's done. He can't come out for the next inning. What? And then in that post game, they told you, oh, well, he's appeared in 27 games out of 30 so far, something like that. Like, we gotta make sure Clay is good for the rest of the year. And Clay goes on to blow 10 saves the rest of the year. What are we talking about? Win the game you're in. Please manage the game that you're in and press the right buttons in real time.
And I think this is a direct responsibility of Cashman. And if the Yankees don't go on to win the World Series, and if the Yankees have their bullpen self-destruct, then if I'm Hal, I'm going to say to Brian, it was your job to bring in a closer or a legitimate bullpen guy. You brought in Mark Leiter. Everybody loved the deal, all the so-called experts, but he hasn't done it so far. To me, and I know you would have given up a lot, I wouldn't give up Spencer Jones, but to me, Tanner Scott was the guy.
Me too. I said the same thing. I mean, I don't know. For the Padres to get him, and then for Brian Cashman to take Eniel De Los Santos, as AJ Pro is like, yeah, we got the guy you should have got. You want to take this guy off my hands to clear space in our bullpen? Yeah, sure.
When the Yankees were the Yankees, they would identify a guy and get it done. And Cashman, for the last few years, hasn't been able to do that. And if I'm Hal, I would say, Brian, I would take a long, hard look at Brian. I know everybody says, oh, he's got a lifetime contract, whatever. But the bottom line is, ever since Hal got booed a couple of years ago at Yankee Stadium, his demeanor has changed.
Yup, Derek Jeter night. He walked out there with a big-ass check. The fans didn't care. They boo. I was looking around like, y'all are crazy. Y'all booing. And Jeter had to stick up for him.
And I think that Hal, I'm not going to say he's going to fire him, but he's going to have to, if the Yankees do self-destruct in the bullpen, and if, God forbid, they do not able to re-sign Soto, would not be surprised if he says, okay, I lost Soto, I lost the championship, it's time to clean house.
Yeah, it's time. Thanks for the call, Bruce. I mean, time isn't promised to all of us. I saw Hal last night, the Little League World Series. I haven't physically seen Hal in a long time. And I saw him. I'm like, man, Hal's getting up there in age. Like, how old is Hal Steinbrenner right now? Almost 60? And I had the thought, and I've said this on the air before, 54. I'm like, don't you want a chip of your own? Don't you want a parade of your own? Don't you want a championship that you can literally say this happened under my watch? Rest in peace to Hank. Rest in peace to George. You know, I'm like, I don't think Hal is firing Cashman ever. But, I mean, he's the boss. And you got to answer to the boss. And if this bullpen self-destructs, and that's the reason why Aaron Judge and Juan Soto don't make it to the Fall Classic, like, head's got to roll. Somebody's got to answer for that. And check me out. The good thing is, you have time to come up with those answers. The answers that you give the media, we don't believe them anymore. What you fed us for this whole season about Clay Holmes, we don't want to hear it anymore. Figure it out internally and do better. Because this could be the year. As we look around the league, like I saw Austin Riley got hurt. And like the Braves, I don't know. Like other teams that are in it every year, I don't know. I'm like, the Yankees got as good of a shot as anybody if they don't get in their own way. Think about that.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at MyBob's.com to play now.